So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Let us know through the live chat if you can. Write to us at myviewmatters@aol.com. For everybody listening online right now in the queue, we thank you. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. And for everybody else, call in numbers are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. I got to tell you, it's been a crazy, crazy world the last couple of days. We are in the midst of a deep freeze, if you will, across the nation. Right here in Louisville, we hit down to about 0 degrees, right at it. We were supposed to be at like 5 below or something like that. We're not going to hit that, obviously. But I tell you, it's been pretty daggone cold. You know, it's fascinating because so many things have been talked about with global warming and Al Gore becoming a billionaire, touting that line to everybody. And you know, I just haven't seen the evidence of it. I don't know about the rest of you guys. Is science wrong? Is science right? It's a good time to find out. But I tell you, it's very interesting when you talk about the global warming, the polar ice caps melting. We've got all of the polar ice caps are actually increasing in size, and we've got a deep freeze across the nation. I tell you, it's hard to buy the global warming theory from people like Al Gore. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Well, I'm not my usual cold self, because usually when I do this show, I'm wandering up and down the driveway, out in the field, petting a horse or something like that, just so you know. You know, full disclosure. That ain't happening.
Did not know that. Did not know that. Where are you calling from now? You in the bunker?
I'm actually in my home office right now. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But, yeah, and if for no other reason, usually I'm out there sneaking the horse treats, you know, and you can't hear it on air, and you're just being buddies with my horse, and I mean, damn, that horse is just like, she went up in the barn, and she's not coming out. unless I want to do the show from a horse stall where when it gets this cold, the horse is like, screw it. I'm not even going outside to crap, okay?
Well, they call me Mr. Ed, and I know I'm not going outside unless I have to. I actually got stuck out in it today for a while. My son actually went car shopping Saturday, so we had to go today so he could sign all the paperwork and all that stuff. We ended up getting stuck at the dealership in and out all day, and it's like, Jesus. But they finally got that done. For those of you who don't know, JCPS, Jefferson County Public Schools, are going to be closed again tomorrow. And I tell you, it's really funny because I heard so many people griping about why were the schools closed today and why are they going to be closed tomorrow. You know, they're thinking that it's always snow and ice would be the only thing to close schools. People don't really want to comprehend when you've got sub-zero weather outside and these children are standing at bus stops. I mean, it's a no-brainer to cancel school. You know, even yeah. Minnesota and Wisconsin, they actually canceled schools due to severe cold. And these are guys that are used to these kind of temperatures. So, you know, but JCPS is
yeah, and it's worth noting that these kids generally stand at a stop sign. So, they don't even have shelters. So, yeah, my wife texted me today, and, you know, our kids, as I always say, you know, Jefferson County Public School System is very welcome. I pay my taxes, but I don't use any of your resources. She said, do you think school will be closed tomorrow, you know, Catholic schools included? And I just wrote, yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's colder tonight than it was yesterday, so.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I just thought it was kind of funny that people with kids, I mean, I'm not talking about people who don't have kids in school like me. Mine are grown. I'm talking about people with elementary school kids that just can't understand why the schools are shut and why their kid is off of school again. You know, like I said,
yeah.
Inconvenience to take care of your child. It just goes to show you how many times we talk about how the parents really don't want to have to take care of their children or anything else. It's interesting how many of them are complaining because their kids aren't in school, so they can't get the day off away from their kids. I just found it pathetic, but we've got so many
yeah.
things going
not,
on, Ed.
Not
I tell
only
you
that,
what,
you know, I oftentimes wonder, is you know, I sort of work inside, outside, and boy, the heater is having a hard time keeping up in the warehouse right now. But go inside, outside, and I always like to say I'm tough. I've washed off mud from a rugby match in a stream, you know, and it's 30 degrees out. But I'm telling you what, you're on a forklift out of a park lot for maybe 5 minutes in this crap. Oh, you get religion fast. I mean, so
oh,
anybody that's going to sit back and say, oh, well, the kids should go, it's like, all right, well, I'm thinking either that person is either thinks that you just sit in your car with the heater running, or they're not going out the door, because anybody that says that, then fine, go stand outside, stay
well,
here,
that's it,
wait
you know.
For something for 10, 15 minutes, and tell me how tough you are.
Well, I used to have a construction business, so I worked outside in this stuff all the time. And I tell you, you know, it's rough. You know, even with coveralls and everything you can put on, you know, you still freeze when you're out doing construction. I feel sorry for my construction brothers and sisters out there working right now, because I tell you, there is nothing worse than being out in this stuff working. You know, we've got so many things going on, and our good friend Paul Hogger is pointing out in the chat room, you know, and he's got a good point, because one of the things with this extremely cold spell we're going through right now is how many of these school buildings can't actually heat their buildings properly. You know, we do have a lot of schools that that's always a problem with. So, yeah, that's another consideration as well. So, you know, we have to consider all that. In the meantime, Ed, I tell you, speaking of cold, as we all know now, Charlie Strong, UofL coach Charlie Strong, took the job at Texas. This is exactly a year after telling the whole world that he turned down Tennessee because he was just so happy at Louisville. Now he walked out and took the job at Texas. Good? Bad? I mean, there's a lot of people that don't like.
To me, it's to be expected. I'll be honest with you. You know, we talk about the profitability of U of L sports programs and stuff, and it for the students, maybe not, but for all the adults, it's about money. And to his credit, he could have taken more money at Tennessee last year, didn't. But as they've said, flat out, Texas football is, as far as money goes and fan base, it is the biggest program in the United States. So,
see, this one wasn't about money,
I wouldn't have been sad. You know, I'd have been pissed off if he'd have left us for, you know, just some FEC team or just some
right.
Big Ten team, but he left us for the, as far as dollars, cents, and attendance goes, the preeminent program in the United States, $140 million program. I mean, it's the big one. So, I guess I can't blame him.
Well, I don't. You know, I don't blame Charlie Strong for leaving. You know, as far as the money is concerned, Tom Jurich offered to match whatever money they offered. So it wasn't money that was a situation here. you know, Charlie Strong, I mean, for good, bad, or ugly, the hardest part for everybody to really comprehend here, and it's actually kind of hard for me to comprehend, but I understand the explanation, was the fact, you know, Charlie preaches loyalty, 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 and then he essentially met with Texas, did all of this stuff behind the veil, and, you know, then left without even so much as speaking to the team. However, for everybody that's sitting out there complaining about that, understand this, because Charlie actually, you know, made time to talk to a couple of reporters locally. He didn't have to do that and everything else. But the real problem was the fact that this all happened during Christmas break. So the students were gone home. The team wasn't there for him to talk to and relay his, you know, his thoughts and his feelings and expressions. So, you know, you can't do much about that. But I tell you, you know, this guy, I think you're right. I don't know how you turned down Texas to stay at Louisville. Texas is the premier football program in the country, as far as I'm concerned. Texas takes their football a hell of a lot more serious than we do. And, you know, when you get to that situation, I think it's going to be interesting to see how Charlie Strong does, because I tell you, you know, he was here
now,
4 years.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think there's, and I don't want to say it's a racist component, but I think there's a racial component to it, too, that we can't ignore. I mean, because you look at Charlie Strong in the SEC and how many years at Florida, he was a full-blown defensive coordinator for Florida, never got the call, you know, because it's just, maybe there was some prejudice there or not. And then I guess at some point, you know, you got to represent. And when as a minority you get a call for the preeminent program, it's, you know what, you're not only doing it for yourself, but let's face it, in premier programs, African-American coaches are an extreme minority in the NCAA. They're more popular in the NFL. So I think it's good on that count that he goes there. I hope he kicks ass. I really do, and just represents him. I think he's a class act guy. I think he takes academics seriously. I think he takes family seriously. I think he's just he's a good guy. He just got handed an offer that, you know, the one offer that you can't refuse, and there it was.
Well, I think I agree with you. I mean, Charlie Strong is a class guy. I have nothing but respect for the man. I think he came here for 4 years, and even with a 37-15 win-loss record, which is great for a four-year coach coming into the program the way that he came into it, you know, even taking the games out of it, you have to look at Charlie Strong, the man, and I think he was an asset to this community. His wife and family was very involved in this community in Louisville, and, you know, they gave everything they had while they were here, and I don't think you can fault a man for trying to better his career. You know, by going to a larger program. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, though, because I think the racial component, I think you're absolutely right. He was passed over because of his race so many times. And once Tom Jurich took a chance and hired Charlie Strong as head coach here, he basically, Charlie Strong said, hey, race isn't a factor. I'm a coach first. And he proved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, to think that there is a black head coach at Texas says a hell of a lot about Charlie Strong and his character and his abilities. That you know, yep. Texas is very racial on its own. So the fact that they're willing to come into the 21st century is a real good thing. And I hope he has great success there too. But I do know this: Texas fans are not nearly as patient as Louisville fans are. Man, I tell you what, you get a couple of 8-5 seasons like Mack Brown went through, and Charlie Strong's tenure there will be short lived.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about
that. I don't think they have to be as patient either, because Texas went to a bowl game this year. You know, they're
right.
They have a good program. They are not they did not get Cragthorpe the way U of L did, and you know, Charlie was handed a 2-year, you know, a program that had bad losing seasons in a row and rebuilt it. I think he's going in there, he's just gotta get under the hood a little bit, a couple good recruits. You know, he's got something to work with. Let's face it, when Craig Cook was here, he wrecked U of L. And
there's no doubt.
I think now he's just got to add a few decent recruits, maybe a couple of JUCOs, change the game plan around a little bit, and boom. I think he's up and running in a year. I think he can improve on it in 1 year, and I think he's going to be competitive in 2 to 3 years. I think it's Texas. I think he'll do well. I hope he does well.
Well, I know it's had 2 8-5 seasons under Mack Brown, and I think Coach Strong will definitely maintain at least an 8-5 season next year. I mean, he's got a lot of talent there. You know, Mac was known to really bring talent into Texas. He just didn't do much the last few years to develop them. And I think that's where Charlie comes in. I tell you, on the short list here, though, it's interesting because our good friend Paul Hogger is pointing out, you know, there's only been one head coach that left Louisville that had any success at all. And I tell you, I know who that is, and that's Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino left Louisville and had winning seasons right away. Now take his personal transgressions aside. You know, I've been out there touting Bobby Petrino ever since I found out Charlie Strong was leaving. I think Bobby Petrino would be a great fit, but right now, from what I understand from insiders, there's three people that Tom Drich is looking at. One of them is Sean Watson, current UofL assistant coach. You've got Bobby Petrino, and you've got a guy by the name of Rich Rodriguez, who's a defensive coordinator. I tell you, from the fan base here in Louisville, you know, Petrino is saying that he wants to get what he calls a destination coach. That means a coach who's going to come here and stay, not use us as a stepping stone. Has Petrino learned his lesson from everything he's been through the last couple of years? Would he be a good fit for UofL? I personally think so.
I think he has. I mean, he's, you know, he went to the NFL and got his butt handed to him by the exceedingly large egos in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went to, you know, ended up in Arkansas and royally screwed up, and he did not leave under his own terms.
Well, it's interesting because
he left damaged goods. But you know, the thing is, and I've joked with a few UK fans, and then of course, you know, and UofL fans too. It's, you know, publicly the UK fans and other rival schools are making jokes about Petrino coming back. Like, oh yeah, you know, you're bottom feeding. You know, burn me once, shame on you. Burn me twice, shame on me. But I think secretly, and I know your friend Eddie Woods chimed in on that too. He liked the comment. I said, secretly, they're in agony.
Well, I think so too. You know, Bobby Petrino.
Petrino is a badass coach. I mean, he can turn a program around in a heartbeat. Ask UK how that works at Western, you know, little old Western Kentucky.
Oh, sure.
Twice. You know, he had Arkansas turning around hard in the SEC until he screwed up. But, yeah, I think. Outwardly, there'll be jokes, and I think he's damaged goods enough that the premier programs, like in the SEC, I don't think you can go back to the SEC, and the premier programs probably don't want him because he's too much of a spotlight. I think he'd be a good fit at UofL. I mean, he had people talking national titles. He had people talking Heismans, and if he comes back, like I say, there's going to be a lot of jokes, and deservedly so, but there's also going to be a lot of gnashing of teeth and gnawing of fingernails because they know if Petrino shows up, it's like, dude, if he can kick your butt when he's at Western,
well,
he's
Petrino
going to
comes
unload
to UofL,
when he gets to UofL. So I hope he comes back, and I think he's learned his lesson.
Well, and I think so, too, because, you know, Bobby Petrino, I mean, he will have a chance to contend for a national championship in the ACC. I mean, that was the biggest deal this last year. As everybody talked about, Louisville was a national championship contender, but Louisville didn't have a schedule or a conference to really fall back on. So they really didn't have any shot at that, regardless of how everybody was trying to play it. But, you know, moving into the ACC next year, I mean, really the only thing left for Bobby Petrino is to find a school that he can build to maybe a national championship. And I've got to tell you, Bobby Petrino is the one who put Louisville on the map. You know, in his tenure at Louisville, he did a fantastic job. He made Louisville a household name. Now, you know, then you had Cragthorpe that came in and destroyed it, and then Charlie Strong came back in and rebuilt it. God bless Charlie Strong. But, you know, Bobby Petrino, I think, would be a great fit. What really puzzles me a lot, though, is a pain. I'm watching a lot of these sports boards today and everything else, and I know we're spending a lot of time on sports. We don't normally do that. We will get to other things, believe me. But, you know, I've been paying attention to a lot of the comments on sports boards and all the other stuff, and you're seeing these UofL fans, I mean, legitimate UofL fans, people I know that are UofL fans, season ticket holders, are screaming because Bobby Petrino, because of all of the personal stuff that he went through, you know, is scum, that he don't need to be here. And I'm sitting here laughing because the first thing I tell them is, what about Rick Pitino and Karen Seifer? Oh, no, that's no big deal. That's no big deal. So it's fascinating to me that you know, Rick Pitino and everything that he went through publicly and the disgrace that he brought to UofL as a coach, you know, it is okay because they just won a national championship, I guess. Yeah. But Bobby Petrino, who has paid for his sins, Petrino never did, but Bobby Petrino has paid for his sins and really is just looking for another shot, you know, that, that anybody could think negative. I mean,
yeah.
we do give people second chances in this world, and I think he'd be a great fit. That's my opinion, but I really...
I agree with you on the second chances, and also if you look at the character of Tom Jurich, you know,
mm-hmm.
he brings in high-quality coaches that get the job done most of the time. Okay, there was Craig Thorpe.
Oh, yeah.
But he brings in high-caliber coaches. Petrino is a known he's a known quantity. They know he delivers. And if you remember what Petrino said after he won the national title, he said, you know, I screwed up. And I
yep.
did some things that brought a lot of embarrassment to this program. And he said, I owe Tom Jurich a national title. He said, this is for him because he stood behind me. So I think that says something to Tom Jurich. You know, in Louisville, we know he's the best athletic director in the nation. So I think that says something to his character that he believes in second chances.
Well, you know, Tom Jurich.
He also believes that you owe him. So if he goes out on a limb for Petrino and endures the, you know, the bullshit that would no doubt come with it, you know, Petrino and Jurich, I would think, would have an understanding. It's like, okay, I'm gonna take the heat for this. You got to deliver, and Petrino can. I think that's how Jurich rolls. So I think Petrino is right in there.
Well, and also Tom Jurich and Bobby Petrino, I mean, they have got some good fences going because, I mean, Bobby Petrino got the job at Western Kentucky because Tom Jurich vouched for him. Tom Jurich went out on a limb to vouch for Bobby Petrino's character and everything else, and WKU hired him largely based on that recommendation by Tom Jurich. And even Bobby Petrino has went public and stated that he owes Tom Jurich everything because Tom Jurich has always been there for him. And you gotta wonder too.
Jurich being as good and as savvy as he is, maybe he vouched for Western Kentucky because he wanted to keep Petrino an hour and a half away so they could maybe get together.
I don't know that Jurich went that far with it.
Once in a while, just to make sure it's like, okay, Bobby, you know, it's kind of like keeping your hand on a doorknob when you think stuff's going to go wrong in a bar or something. You want to get the hell out. You stay close to the door.
Right.
Maybe Jurich kept him close because he's like, you know, if they come calling for Charlie's Palm, which they did last year, he's like, I'm gonna have something real close.
You know, I don't think Jurich thought that far in advance, but I tell you, it would not surprise me much. Jurich is. He's the cream of the crop as far as ADs are concerned, in my opinion. That is probably the best hire that U of L ever made in their sports program, bar none. Tom Jurich is a class act. He's a class guy. You know, he has done some amazing things at Louisville. But, you know, even as a person, you can't find anybody to say one bad thing about Tom Jurich. You know, so that says a lot about his character.
And being the business person, I can also look at it and say with Petrino coming from, you know, Western, which is a little Sun Belt conference school, and having been damaged goods PR-wise in the SEC at Arkansas, yeah, Jurich can probably get him an absolutely superlative coach probably for a pretty good price.
I think he's still in the $4 million range myself, but that's just me. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We're going to come back. We'll get into the rest of the news, man. Believe it or not, there's a lot going on. We've got a lot going on right here in Louisville I want to talk about. So stick with us. For you guys that want to call in, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, make sure you hit that number 1 on your dial pad, and we'll get you on as soon as possible. You're listening to the Ed Sprinkster Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Sprinkster of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
I tell you, man, I love this new break music. It's pretty cool, nice and smooth. Kind of keeps you in gear, you know. And then you got to come back. You got to listen to me. That's the way it is, folks. Welcome back to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Believe it or not, there is more going on in the world than UofL sports. Coming out of Detroit today.
Although in Louisville, we're going to talk about it, but we're done.
Well, you got a point. But I tell you, we have some great news coming out of Detroit today. Ford has announced its best sales results in 6 years. Think about that, because Ford has put up record-breaking profits the last 2 years, and this is the best sales they've had in 6 years because of big demand for pickup trucks. Their sales rose 11% last year. That's huge. But the reason it affects Louisville is because they also saw record sales for the Escape SUV. As everybody knows, Louisville was one of the plants, LAP was one of the plants that Ford decided to rebuild and build a platform where they could do multiple vehicles off of, and the Escape, the newly designed Escape, has turned out to be a huge record-selling vehicle. So that bodes well for Louisville going forward. And, of course, the Fusion sedan was a record-selling year as well. That's what my son bought today, and I tell you what, guys, it's a great car. And I got to give a free plug here, and I tell you why. Byerly Ford on Dixie Highway is where me and my family started buying cars quite a few years ago. A guy by the name of Tom Hyland up there, H-Y-L-A-N-D. If you guys need a car, seriously, if you want to look at Ford, go check out Tom Hyland at Byerly Ford. Normally I don't give free plugs like that, but I tell you what, this guy has been doing this stuff for 40 years. I've never had a bad experience with the vehicles we bought through him, and he's a great guy, and it's a good dealership, so I had to do that because they really took care of my son today. And, you know, you don't find too many people that do that kind of stuff, but they really did. In the meantime, man, we've got a trouble brewing in Louisville Metro Council. Earlier today at 4 o'clock, they met to elect a new Democratic caucus chair and the new Metro Council president. Although there's nothing new about any of it, Vicki Welch was elected as the Democratic caucus chair, and Dan Johnson was elected as the vice chair. Jim King was reelected as president. Now, why is this important? Why would we care? Well, I tell you, folks, you've got a 17 out of 26 majority that's Democrats. You're not going to have any Republicans get anywhere, and you're not going to have anything different in Louisville than what we've become accustomed to. But what's really interesting here was the split for the caucus chairs, because David James is the current majority caucus chair until tonight with Vicki Welch will take over. There's a big, big explosion going on behind the scenes for the last week because the Shanklin Eight, which would include David James, were pushing to keep David there. And from what I understand, Jim King got personally involved, made a deal with Vicki Welch to run for the caucus, and made a deal with Dan Johnson to run for vice chair and put his support and weight behind him. But what was really interesting here is Vicki Welch stated that the only reason she was running for the caucus chair was because of David James's decision and his vote in the Barbara Shanklin case. That is very alarming to me because that shows a split that we just don't need. And it's even more disturbing because Vicki Welch is actually going trying to deny it and says that the only reason she decided to run for the Democratic caucus chair was to boost her reelection chances next year. So she's not running to lead the Democratic caucus to help Louisville or even help the party. She was only running for her own personal gain so she could put it on a resume to help her get reelected next year. And she still got elected. How pathetic is that, Ed?
Party politics. Party politics. To a degree, same crap that gave us the Shanklin 8. Although the think of 7 sounds much better, but, you know, it's I knew you was going to have some fun with Vicki Aubrey Welch, but I look at Dan Johnson, too.
You know what, though? I've got to say this very clearly, and I'm dead sincere about this. I don't agree with anything Dan Johnson does politically, and I tell him that. I've got no problem with that. Dan Johnson actually texts me on Facebook every now and then, going back and forth on some things. But I've got to say this, though. Whether you like his politics, whether you agree with his politics or not, you almost have to respect Dan Johnson for standing up for what he believes in, because I tell you, the NBA team debacle is a great example. We were chastising Dan Johnson and the NBA team and everything else here on this show not too long ago. And Dan Johnson actually called in to defend his position. And you got to give the man some credit for that.
Yeah, well, he was also one of the original Shanklin 7, so we owe that to him very much. I mean, to me, you know, you think of the ethics. To me, it's more, I think, of the ethics meltdown over Shanklin and the fact that, you know, we can say, well, she's guilty, but we won't remove her, which is the way of saying, well, you know, if we ever do anything wrong, screw you. We can keep score, but we'll never be held accountable. And he was one of them. And to think that somebody that would basically is indecisive enough to say you're guilty, but, you know, and you're guilty of fraud and you're guilty of theft, essentially, but, hey, you're okay by me, and then to put that person in a leadership position, you know, hey, might as well hire a car thief to work on a car lot, you know. Whatever.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you there at all. I just thought it was very interesting. But look for more of the same. I'm wondering what's going to really happen here. I've got to be honest with you, too, though. I do not personally think that Jim King has done a bad job as president of the Metro Council. There's a lot of things. You know, everybody thinks that I've got this boner for Jim King and I hate the guy. It's never been about that. It's been about accountability for malfeasance with our tax dollars, as it is with everybody. But Jim King is the Metro Council president, has actually done a pretty good job. So I'm not going to chastise him for that, but I don't like the things that go on behind the scenes, and I don't know what deals were made with Vicki Welch and Dan Johnson, but we're going to be paying attention to that going forward. In the meantime, we've got more news going on. Kentucky State leadership announced today, Jack Conway announced, that they're going to put $32 million into drug treatments. You know, because Kentucky, you know, is one of the highest prescription drug abuse problems in the country. And we also have a growing heroin problem. But what's interesting here is this. They said that they're going to put $32 million into drug treatment, but the money comes from two different drug settlements with pharmaceutical companies. The pharmaceutical companies settled with the state for marketing diabetes and osteoarthritis drugs. You know, and these drugs supposedly raise the risk of cardiovascular problems, so the attorney general sues, they get paid. But they're taking that $32 million to put it into drug treatment centers. Should that money really be going towards that, or should that money be going to people that were hurt by these bad drugs in the settlement. See, I don't understand how you can take that money and put it into drug treatment versus paying the people who have been harmed with cardiovascular problems. What do you think?
Well, I would guess it depends on whether they, you know, that's a that could be a criminal type settlement. It depends on whether they got something in a civil settlement. If they got something in a civil settlement, then so be it. But, you know, being of a libertarian pedigree myself, I also look at it like, well, if you want to, you know, that's a fine place, a nice one-time shot to get some money. If you really, really want to finance drug prevention, how's about we take all the nonviolent three strikes, two strikes, one strike people that are in, that might be in prison for getting caught with a dime bag or something, and let's just take the money we would have spent on them and let them go, you know, good luck, and use that money for drug interdiction rather than lock up nonviolent drug offenders.
I totally agree with you because, you know, the nonviolent drug offenders are costing us hundreds of millions of dollars a year in prison sentences and everything else. That certainly makes that $32 million look like a drop in the bucket. I'm in total agreement with you. It is interesting, though, when we look at what's really going on. Last year, or in 2012, I should say, and this information is coming from the Courier-Journal. See, we cite our sources, even though they don't. But a report last year showed that there were 1,004 drug overdose deaths in 2012, the majority of which were by prescription drug overdose, oxycodone and all that stuff. However, since they started cracking down on all this pill abuse with the Florida pipeline and all that stuff, you know, they've started leveling that off. But heroin picked up the slack. We had 22 deaths in 2011 due to heroin and 143 in 2012. So you're talking about, you know, a 1,000% or 800% increase. You know, we have to start looking at the real problems of drug addiction and drug abuse and quit trying to do these Band-Aid fixes. Now, I like the fact that we're doing treatment centers. Don't get me wrong. We need to spend money on treatment. But I'm more concerned, and I'm more in line with you, that we need to take these hundreds of millions of dollars that we're pouring into these private jails. Remember that. There's somebody getting rich off of this. It's not the state-run jail. You know, and take these nonviolent drug offenders out of the system and use that money wisely. It's not going to cost us any more, but we're going to get more results with it. So I'm in total agreement with you there. We have interesting things going on right now. This is the long session coming up this year in the legislature. So it's going to be a biannual budget. You know, there are all kinds of needs out there. We talk about education. We talk about funding cuts that have already been there. You know, the places that have coal. You know, then, of course, you got people like Greg Fisher who want to tout this local option sales tax. But really, really what it comes down to this year is because 2014 is an election year, are they really going to do anything? Are they going to do anything with tax reform? Are they really going to do anything to put a budget out there that's going to take care of the education,
wow,
the pensions, all of those things?
Well, you're asking me if the can't get it done unless it's a special session. State legislature is going to get anything done in the regular session, huh? I mean, they may get some minor stuff done. As far as minimum wage or sales tax, no. I could see the local option thing maybe happening because that's sort of it's almost like a lateral there. It's like, okay, you know, we approve that the local governments want to do this. You can float that. You can float that balloon. But really, all that's doing is giving them permission. State government's not raising taxes. They're just saying, okay, you can vote on these things. So I think that's a lateral. So I think that gets handed off and passed. Gambling? David Williams not there. Yeah, I think we'll end up with it. And it won't be as bad as back when we railed against it. But
right.
It was absolutely exclusive to the racetrack, so it was a legislative monopoly. I don't think it's going to be that bad. I think there'll be a few the opportunity, you know, it won't be as exclusive, but it's still not going to be, it's not going to be gambling for the people, by the people. It's still going to be fairly corporately, you know, tightly held corporately. So, again, they won't get any of my money, but I think we may see some gambling legislation go through, and I think it may be handed off as well to a to a ballot vote. But, yeah, as far as sales tax, no. As far as minimum wage, nope, nope, nope. We're surrounded by right-to-work states. So they're, if they do that, you know, whatever. I'm here to tell you the right-to-work states are probably putting money behind that going, please, please jack your minimum wage up and not have right-to-work. You are making this way too easy for us.
What was killing me, though, is when we talk about expanded gambling. I mean, for one thing, when you talk about tax reform, there's no such thing. These guys say we're going to, with a tax reform, we're going to raise revenue. All that means is you're just switching the way you collect taxes to get more money, so you're still going to get more tax money. So, you know, that's not really the way these guys look at tax reform is a joke to me. And having Jerry Avinson lead that a couple of years ago was the biggest laughing stock I think I've ever seen in some of the proposals that came through. But to get into expanded gambling, though, there's already two bills in there. There's one in each chamber. Larry Clark has pre-filed an amendment that's going to put the gambling issue on the ballot. And Dan Syme has actually filed something in the Senate as well. Here's the rub. This has always been the rub for me, and this is one thing that I've spent years working on. You know, I went to Frankfurt, three or four years ago now, and wrote Senate Bill 222. You don't even have to have anything on the ballot, folks, to have legalized gambling. They can actually go through the LRC and rewrite the language without anything approved on a ballot anywhere and have casino gambling. That is an easy thing to do. I wrote the bill that proved it. But the interesting thing is with expanded gambling, what Dan Syme is saying is in his bill, he is putting out there that his bill will allow an amendment to allow up to 7 casinos, but it's going to dedicate 10% of casino revenue to the horse industry. Larry Clark, of course, his don't have any details yet at all. And the real problem is just a couple of months ago, if I'm not mistaken, Steve Beshear said that he wants to put gambling on the ballot. And work out the details later. That's my concern, because anytime we look at expanded gambling with casinos or anything else, it's going to affect the charities in this state. When we talk about the bingo halls and things like that, every bingo session is run by a charity who depends on that money for their survival. So, you know, we've already seen a lot of charities go out of business, like ElderServe. They no longer have a bingo because of the standards that are forced on them by the state as far as profit margins are concerned. And I can get into details on that, but it'll take another show to do it. Here's the reality for me, Ed. Here's the reality for me. Senate Bill 222 that I wrote gave the horse industry exactly what they wanted. At the time that Patrick Neely with the Keep Organization approached me on behalf of former Governor Brereton Jones, they approached me, Senator Perry Clark, the head of the Kentucky Charitable Gaming Association, and we all sat down together and put together a plan. But at that time, the Keep organization in the horse industry wanted 15.87% of the gambling proceeds. The rest was going to go to the state. The agreement that was made was going to take 5% and give it straight to the Department of Charitable Gaming right here in the state. That department is appointed by the governor. Every leader is appointed by the governor. And they make all the decisions, but that 5% was going to go into a pool that charities would be able to petition and ask for, and that money would be given to charities throughout the state by people that the governor himself appointed. So it was not going to cost a dime to any local municipality like the Louisville Metro Council and things like that. And then, of course, the state was going to get the difference, which was almost 80%. So that was the agreement that was made then. Patrick Neely then, in his infinite wisdom, decided to lie to us and use us and went to Larry Clark and made a behind-the-scenes deal, and that's when they came up with this instant racing crap that they've never made a dime on, and they realized they were wrong on because they wanted the whole pie. But for Dan Syme to dedicate 10% of casino revenue to the horse industry, I think is good. It's less than the 15.87% that was agreed to a few years ago, but we're still not addressing the basic problem, and that is the charitable gaming, places like ElderServe, Cancer, the American Cancer Society, all of these people who run their charities and fend for themselves are still not being provided for, and this is going to force them out of business if we don't have anything in writing to help them. Your thoughts?
Hello.
Ed Martin?
Yeah. Well, I think I listening, I didn't hear you say it, but You know, I tend to agree. I think in this state, gambling has had a foothold for the horsing industry. So I think it's kind of like in the mob. You pay your honorarium for the con, but it can't be too much. Now, one of the things that I would also like to see specify is you know, outside of Churchill Downs Incorporated, I'd be interested in who's getting, who else would be getting these contracts, where they would be located, where they'd be headquartered to. And, you know, because gambling is a, you know, being in manufacturing, I would look at gambling, it's sort of a service industry that takes a lot of money. It just ships it off somewhere. There is no product. It's just entertainment and pissing your money away via the theory of large numbers. So it's basically changing money and putting it in the bank and wiring it to somewhere else. So I would, at some point, I think there should be something in there. It's like, look, you're going to do business in this state. You know, are we going to set the payoff limits? Is there, you know, so some payoff limits on slots and stuff are higher than others. So are we going to just set up a mechanism here that for the most part where poor people, for the most part, lay their money down, gets deposited at the bank, and wired to another state or, in some cases, maybe another country. So, you know, in the details, because this is not like we're not making anything. We're just swapping money out at the, you know, in games of chance and sending it somewhere else. I've always kind of had a bit of a problem with that.
Well, what's really sad, too, is the fact that, you know, you're going to create a whole new level of overhead as well, because when you look at the Department of Gaming and everything else here in the state, they already have enforcement officers. They already have the whole infrastructure in place, so it's not going to cost you any more. You're not going to have to create a bunch of jobs and a new department and all the other stuff, and that's exactly what they're going to do with this. You already have the Kentucky Lottery that stands alone. You've got the Charitable Gaming that stands alone. Now we're going to create a third standalone entity, and all that's going to be is basically jobs for people who support you. It's just going to be another way to take more revenue away from the state. Let's go to the phones real quick. This is the 805 number. What can we do for you?
Hey, Ed, it's Mayo.
Hey, what's going on? What can we do for you, sir?
Oh, not much. I mean, I don't know the specifics. I mean, it's what you're talking about, you know, the bingo halls, terrible gambling, but back when Caesars first opened and, you know, they had the vote and everything, I mean, since that time, you know, even though it's changed the horseshoe, how many millions of dollars has gone into, you know, that part of Indiana that Kentucky lost? How many hundreds of jobs, you know, with the expansion with the hotel and everything that they got, you know, from maintenance to bussers to servers to clerks to dealers, you know, in that area did it create? I mean, it may not be Ford, you know, and having thousands of jobs, but at least there's, you know, a few hundred good-paying, steady jobs. And the last time I'd driven through there years ago, every side road, the main road, light post, signage, everything new, redone, where, you know, here we have main thoroughfares in Louisville with, you know, tire killer potholes in them. So,
well, you've got
I just think the horse industry needs to fall on the sword. You've got somebody that drinks beer and that's not going to go to the bourbon festival, where you have somebody drinks bourbon but doesn't drink beer and is not going to go to, you know, the Falls City Refinery, and that's the difference. You have people that play the ponies, and you have people that like to play blackjack.
Well, see, and that's always been the big thing with me because, you know, I mean, I've been to the boat. I haven't been in quite a while, you know, because I just don't want to gamble. I mean, it's just boring to me. But I've been to the boat, and when I want to go to the boat and play a slot machine or blackjack, that's what I do. When I want to bet horses, I go to Churchill Downs and bet horses during the meet. But I don't do both. I mean, you know, people make a decision, you know, on where to spend those gambling dollars. And ultimately, I mean, at the end of the day, we really have to understand, Churchill Downs is already getting so many tax breaks, you know, and I know Churchill Downs isn't the only track in the state. However, you know, they don't pay for anything, and they're making profits. Their profits are already on our backs because of the tax money that they don't pay. So when you look at all this at play, how much more money do we need to give these guys? I mean, you know, they are a welfare dependent industry that's making millions and giving millions in bonuses every year. Now, do we continue trying to subsidize them, you know, at the expense of everything else, like the potholes and the rolls or any other, you know, job-creating entities. I've just got some real problems with it. I've never been against casino
gambling.
Well,
how many times have they tried sticking something in a bill where only they, you know, they proposed the one deal, what was it, 5 years ago, 7 years ago for gambling, but the gambling casinos could only be on sites owned by, you know, the horse racing industry,
right.
You know, and then they couldn't get that, and then they tried, oh, can we get slot machines at Churchill Downs and the other tracks, and that didn't go through, and then, you know, the smoking thing that they had that doesn't have to do with gambling, but it just,
right.
You know, they're trying to get the money, and they don't want competition, but that's what capitalism is, competition. You know, if you have
totally
the better
agree.
Product or the better idea, somebody's going to go there, and they're going to spend their money on you. Churchill
right.
Downs ticks off enough people, they're not going to go there. I don't know if you still can legally, get online and, you know, do it from the comfort of their home.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I tell you, a lot of people don't realize Kentucky Lottery is number one in all gambling dollars spent in the state. Charitable gaming is number two, and Churchill Downs is a distant third, horse races, yes. It's a distant third for the monies that are spent on gambling. And at one time, charitable gaming was doing roughly a little over $500 million a year right at it in business. That was a lot of money that these charities were providing for themselves. They weren't coming for your taxes. They weren't asking your legislatures or your metro council for money. But once the daggone Department of Gaming realized that they could go through and force them out to try to help Churchill Downs, they started raising all these things. Now you have a 40% profit threshold is one example. Name one business in this country where you're required to make a 40% profit to stay in business. That's one of the things that they do with these nonprofits and these bingo halls is these people like American Cancer or ElderServe, what ultimately put ElderServe out of business in the bingo business was the fact that they couldn't make 40% profit every session. So because they weren't making 40% profit, they had to close the bingo. That was required. You know, there's a lot of things that the state has done and some undue burdens that they put on charities throughout this state that have hurt these charities. Now, instead of $500 or $600 million a year, you know, you're down to $250 to $300 million a year. It's been cut in half. And so that's $250 to $300 million a year that charities have to petition the government to beg, borrow, or steal just to help those less fortunate, people that they were helping on their own before. That's always been the rub. It's never been a situation for me personally to be against casino gambling. I think that would make me a hypocrite. I'm not a hypocrite. But I do believe that if we're going to go down that road, if you want to set a number of land-based casinos, call it seven. That's what Dan Simons put out there. Call it seven land-based casinos. That's fine. But if you're going to allow Churchill Downs to have a license for slot machines, then you have to allow an equal opportunity for all of these charitable gambling halls to have slot machine licenses as well. Would you agree with that, Martin?
Well, that's what I...
Or go ahead, Mayo.
I would say it's Churchill Downs. It's a hypocrite.
I'll agree with that. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, granted, they could be provisional, and there could be, you know, help for all I know, they could bounce or something. I think that at least, especially for Catholic Picnic, it's about the only gambling I do anymore. If they want to set them up for a casino night or something, I think there should be a mechanism in their form to do that. Absolutely. Because let's face it, a lot of these events, like if it's at the VFW or something like that, or it's a charitable event being run at a bingo hall for somebody whose house burned down, or it's a church that's putting on something. These people that are going to, and I think the horse industry needs to lighten up a little, these are people that are not coming to the casino. They're not coming to the horse track. The reason they're there is so they can fellowship with people of a similar cause and drink some beer and eat some bratwurst. And that's what they're there for. And, you know, it's like, oh, and hey, there happens to be a slot or a crap table there. Okay.
Well, you know, that's interesting, too.
I don't think anybody's done an economic impact study on that, but yeah, you're more social and charitable. I don't think the very crowd is not that kind of people. They're going there because it's a neighborhood church or something like that. They're not going there to, you know, ooh, there's gambling, let's hit it. Like, no, they're going there for the silent auction and hang out with friends and family.
Well, sure, that's your church picnics. You know, that's the thing, because a lot of people don't understand it. This is what was so important. This is what I meant earlier when we talked about changing the language into legislative language, because that's easy to do. All you have to do is have the majority to change the language. You don't have to have anything on the ballot, because, see, what people don't understand is right now you have what's called Monte Carlo nights, for example. The churches, you have Monte Carlo nights. Those are full-blown gambling. There's blackjack, Texas Hold'em, craps, you know, and pool tabs at the bingo halls. Those are nothing more than paper slots. You pull a tab back. If you get three cherries, you win. You know, those are paper slots. Let's call it what it is. So we already have legalized gambling. The difference is that these are event-specific. You're allowed to apply up to four times a year for a 96-hour permit that allows you to do full-blown casino Monte Carlo nights. So 16 days a year, each charity is allowed to do Monte Carlo nights. But every day of the year, you can do pool tabs at a bingo. You can go to anywhere anymore and buy a box of pool tabs. If you want to have a neighborhood party at your house to sell pool tabs, go for it. You know, I mean, anybody can do that. So, you know, we already have casino gambling in place in this state. The only thing the legislative language was going to do was change the 96-hour permit requirement and the limit to four events a year, but it was going to open the whole door so the charities could be included in the process and not excluded in the process. You know, it's not as complicated as it sounds, but it's probably more complicated than I'm making it out to be. But the bottom line is there are options out there, and nobody is looking at them. Instead, they want to sit here and continue coming back to this. Let's put this blanket casino bill out there. We'll fill in the details later, and the horse industry will be taken care of, but screw everybody else. It makes no sense to me. We're fast out of time. Mayo, thanks for the call. Ed Martin, final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts. I'll tell you what, having been out in it, and as soon as I got home, had to go take care of the horse and everything. Final thoughts, all politics aside, it's cold. And even though this is the Internet, and as far as we know, somebody could be listening in Chile, you know, most of our people are probably listening locally and definitely within this polar vortex. So it's damn cold out there. Get out there. If you have an animal, bring them in. And even if they're not housebroke, you know what? Put them in a bathroom. Put some towels down. If they pee in there, go get some Simple Green. You'll knock the snow down the next day. Don't worry about it. But this is the kind of stuff, this is the kind of temperatures that are going to harm animals, if not kill them, if you just think, oh, well, they're tough outdoor animals. Like, yeah, okay, whatever. Don't let me find out.
I'm with you there. St. Louis, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. St. Louis, actually, their police are actually going out, and if they see an animal outside in an owner's yard, they're going out, confiscating the animal and citing the owner, and I think that's fantastic. Folks, your pets will take care of you. You have a pet for a reason. I'm a dog lover myself. I've got four dogs. And let me tell you something. A dog will give you love unconditionally. A dog will treat you the way that you want to be treated. The only thing anybody asks you to do is treat your pet the way you want to be treated. This weather is deadly. Your pet will die. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Bring your pet in for them. Ed, I'm glad you brought that up. As far as everything else, guess what? There's always tomorrow night, man. You folks have a great night. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow night at 7. I'll be back here with Mr. Martin, and we'll rock and roll. Take care.
All right,
have a
sir.
Great night. God bless you, folks. See you, Ed.
All